Quantities of milk, curd, clarified butter, similar other necessities. Therefore, if rivers are not polluted and are allowed to flow in their own way, or sometimes allowed to flood the land becomes very fertile and able to produce all kinds of vegetables, trees, and plants. The word rasa means taste. Actually, all rasas are taste within the earth, and as soon as seeds are sown in the ground, various trees sprout up to satisfy our different tastes. For instance, sugarcane provides juices to satisfy our taste for sweetness, and oranges provide the juices to satisfy our taste for a mixture of sour and sweet. Similarly, there are pineapples and other fruits. At the same time, there are chilies to satisfy our taste for pungency. Although the earth's ground is the same, different tastes arise due to different kinds of seeds. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bija Mam Sarvabhutanam, I am the original seed of all existences. Therefore, all arrangements are there. And as stated in Upanishad Purnamidam, complete arrangements for the production of all the necessities of life are made by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. People should therefore learn how to satisfy the Yajna Purusha, Lord Vishnu. Indeed, the living entity's prime business is to satisfy the Lord, because the living entity is part and parcel of the Lord. Thus, the whole system is so arranged that the living entity must do his duty as he is constitutionally made. Without doing so, all living entities must suffer. That is the law of nature. The words Taravo, Bhuri, Varshmana indicate very luxuriant, grown, big-bodied trees. The purpose of these trees was to produce honey and varieties of fruit. In other words, the forest also had its purpose in supplying honey, fruits, and flowers. Unfortunately, in Kali Yuga, due to an absence of yajna, there are many big trees in the forest. But they do not supply sufficient fruits and honey. Thus, everything is dependent on the performance of yajna. The best way to perform yajna in this age is to spread the Sankirtan movement all over the world. King Prithu was presented with various gifts from the general populace and predominated deities of all planets. The oceans and seas were full of valuable jewels and pearls, and the hills were full of chemicals and fertilizers. Four kinds of edibles were produced for Jesus. Therefore, as stated in the Upanishad, this material creation is supplied with all potencies for the production of all necessities required by the living entities, not only human beings, but animals, reptiles, aquatics, and trees. The oceans and seas produce pearls, coral, and valuable jewels, so that fortunate law-abiding citizens can utilize them. Similarly, the hills are full of chemicals, so that when rivers flow down from them, the chemicals spread over the fields to fertilize the four kinds of foodstuffs. These are technically known as charvya, edibles which are chewed, leha, those which are licked, chusha, those which are swallowed, and peya, those which are drunk. Uttara Maharaj was greeted by the residents of other planets and their presiding deities. They presented various gifts to the king and acknowledged him as the proper type of king, by whose planning and activities everyone throughout the universe could be happy and prosperous. It is clearly indicated in this verse that the oceans and seas are meant for producing jewels, but in Kali Yuga the oceans are simply utilized for fishing. Shudras and poor men are allowed to fish, but the higher classes like the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas would gather pearls, jewels, and coral. Although poor men would catch tons of fish, they would not be equal in value to one piece of coral or pearl. In this age, so many factories for the manufacturing of fertilizers have been opened, but when the personality of God is pleased by the performance of yogis, the fields automatically produce fertilizing chemicals which help produce edibles in the fields. Everything is dependent on the people's acceptance of the Vedic principles of sacrifice. King Prithu was dependent on the Supreme Personality of God, who is known as Adokshaja, because King Prithu performed so many sacrifices. He was superhumanly enhanced by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. King Prithu's opulence, however, could not be tolerated by the king of heaven, Indra, who tried to impede the progress of his opulence. Her part in this verse, there are two significant purposes expressed in the word Adokshaja, Bhagavan, Indra, and Prithu. Maharaj Prithu is an incarnation of Vishnu, yet he is a great devotee of Lord Vishnu. Although an empowered incarnation of Lord Vishnu, he is nonetheless a living entity. As such, he must be a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although one is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his incarnation, he should not forget his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Kali Yuga, there are many self-made incarnations, rascals, who declare themselves to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The words Bhagavan, Indra, indicate that a living entity can even be as exalted and powerful as King Indra, or even King Indra is an ordinary living entity in the material world and possesses the four defects of the conditioned soul. King Indra is described here as Bhagavan, which is generally used in reference to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this case, however, King Indra is addressed as Bhagavan because he has so much power in his hands. Despite his becoming Bhagavan, he is envious of the incarnation of God. Prithu Maharaj. The defects of material life are so strong that due to contamination, King Indra became envious of an incarnation of God. We should try to understand, therefore, how a conditioned soul becomes fallen. The opulence of King Prithu was not dependent on material conditions. As described in the verse, he was a great devotee of Adokshaja. The word Adokshaja indicates the personality of God who was beyond the expression of mind and words. However, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears before the devotee in his original form of eternal bliss and knowledge. The devotee is allowed to see the Supreme Lord face to face, although the Lord is beyond the expression of our senses and beyond our direct perception. Flowing rivers supplied all kinds of tastes, sweet, pungent, sour, etc., and very big trees supplied fruit and honey in abundance. The cows, having eaten sufficient green grass, supplied profuse quantities of milk, curd, clarified bhavanas, or other necessities. So these verses describe the prosperity of the land under Prithu. So all the products of nature were in abundance. So there was proper water, proper grass, proper trees, fruits, flowers, etc., grains, and the cows have sufficient grass, so therefore there is sufficient milk. So everyone was allowed to get their nourishment in the proper way. That's the human beings. So of course the human beings must utilize the grass or the trees, etc., or the rivers. But nevertheless, there was plenty of supply. So the consumption by the human beings did not interfere with the plentifulness of the products. They kept producing in a proper way. So there was a balance between the human beings and nature. And of course, all of this was because of the nature of the leader, and that was Prithu. So the important point here is that Prithu accepted the Supreme Lord as the topmost person worthy of worship. So the leader, in other words, recognized that though he was a leader, it was not his right to dominate the earth or the people or the products of the earth. Rather, he saw that the Supreme Lord was in charge of everything. So, in this way, the society and the earth were completely content. Unfortunately, we see that Indra was not content, even though he should have been, because he was the devata in charge of Swarga Loka, and he was also getting his share of the sacrifice. Still, he was not satisfied because of the idea that it was competition. In one sense, of course, there is no competition because everybody has their specific role to play. Prithu has a certain role to play, and then he will disappear after some time. So it's not a real competition for Indra. But because of his Indra's sense of pride, he did not want anyone to equal him in the amount of horse sacrifices that he could perform. And therefore, he became worried that Prithu was surpassing him in that aspect. On the other hand, we do know that ultimately Prithu is superior to Indra, because he's a Shaktivesh avatar of the Lord, and Indra isn't. Indra is a vibhuti of the Lord, a jiva with certain powers, but those powers are temporary. Prithu is a jiva with permanent endowment of powers by the Supreme Lord. So he has a very special position. So he also is eternal in the spiritual world, whereas Indra is a temporary post. He has a material body. So ultimately, Prithu was superior to Indra, but he was also playing a certain role on earth as a king, as a human being. Therefore, Indra was confused. He thought he didn't understand the nature of Prithu. At the same time, we see that Prithu understood his position. Even though he is a Shaktivesh avatar, he also understands he is not the Supreme Lord, and therefore he was the servant of Supreme Lord Vishnu. So he had proper understanding of his position in relation to the Supreme Lord. And Indra had a misunderstanding of Prithu's position, and therefore he tried to interrupt his sacrifices. So the significance of this story is that all living entities have to understand their proper position. And when they misunderstand, then this creates problems for everyone. When Indra misunderstands the position of Prithu and interferes with his sacrifice, this also creates disturbance in the material world. And we'll see this the whole rest of this chapters are dealing with this problem of Indra's interference. So Indra shouldn't interfere with others as long as the sacrifices are going on properly. And Prithu was performing the sacrifices properly. He recognized the devatas, he recognized the Supreme Lord, and therefore there was no cause for interference. We see in the case of Govardhan, Indra was disturbed because his sacrifice was stopped. In the case of Prithu, it wasn't stopped. So Prithu was doing his duty, but Indra felt challenged by the horse sacrifices of Prithu, and therefore he wanted to interfere. So in one sense, that wasn't proper for him to do so. So all the persons, that is the devatas and the human beings and the kings and the Shaktivesh avatars, have to understand their position in relation to the Supreme Lord. And if they don't, then we end up with all sorts of problems in the material world. So the kings in the line of Manu generally have this understanding. Manu is also empowered, like the devatas, to carry out work on behalf of the Supreme Lord. So he has some special qualification as far as his realization is concerned. Unfortunately, Vena was some sort of anomaly in this, and he was opposite because of the mother's side. So therefore, this was an interruption to the line of kings, but the sages produced Prithu from his body to continue the line, but ultimately he was not produced in the normal way because he's an avatar of the Lord, so technically that was only a pretext for continuing the line of kings. So Prithu is actually very special. He was not born like an ordinary living entity. So he has a special position as a king plus Shaktivesh avatar of the Lord. And so his activities are remarkable. He carries out the normal duties of the king following Dharma. But as avatar of the Lord, he does some special activities which other kings cannot do. And so that was described in the previous chapter. He leveled the earth, and he carried out the town planning, and he made the earth give proper products when it had stopped giving due to the influence of King Vena. So once this is accomplished, his role is finished. Once he establishes the proper production of the earth and the institution of Dharma and the line of kings, then actually his role is really finished. So Indra does not have to worry, actually, that he's going to compete with him, because, as we see, all the avatars do their particular job, then they disappear. So Prithu would also disappear after some time, and then there would be no challenge for Indra. So Indra, we see here, is he shows some envy of the position of Prithu, which is not proper, because Prithu is Shaktivesh avatar of the Lord, so actually Indra should worship him. But because of his superficial superior position being on Svarga Loka, then we see that such envy taking place. So this is also, of course, not the usual case of the devatas, because they should be in Satvagun. And Satvagun means they are free from bad qualities in general. So that normally they're not. But we also know that Sattva-guna is not pure Sattva-guna. So there are sometimes Tamaguna or Rajaguna may arise. So here we find Indra under the influence of Tamaguna, even though generally the devatas are in Sattva-guna. So this is the nature of the material world. So this shows Indra is actually inferior. He is still subjected to the modes of material nature, even though he is appointed by the Lord and he's in Satvagun. Prithu Maharaj, on the other hand, is Shaktivesh avatar of the Lord, so he never shows gunas, Satvagun, Rajagun, or Tamagun. He is superior to that. So, though both are jivas, and Prithu is acting as a human being, nevertheless, he is superior to Indra, who, though in a superior position of a devata, is a mixture of the gunas. He's still in the gunas. So that is the relative position of these personalities. So we do have regular jivas, then we have jivas that follow Dharma, including great kings, etc. And then we have devatas, who are above the earth because they have more predominance of sattva-guna than the earth people, and they are put in the position of control. And they are called the Buddhis of the Lord. They got that position by the Lord's mercy. And we have Manus. Manus themselves are also empowered by the Lord. And they start dynasties. Unfortunately, some of the kings in the dynasties are normal human beings like Vena, and they go in the opposite direction. But generally, those in the dynasty are good kings. So the kings also are considered the bhutis of the Lord. But then we have, superior to them, are the jivas who are Shaktivesh avatars. So they are actually superior to all of these devas or the human beings or the kings. Because they have eternal relationship with the Lord and internal empowerment. So they're superior. But superior to those avatars are the real avatars of the Lord. That is, those who are actually the Supreme Lord. Now, they're not Shaktivesh avatar, they are simply avatar. They are superior to all of the others. Their position is constitutionally different. So therefore, even the Shaktivesh avatars are worshipping the Supreme Lord. So these are the various avatars and the forms of Vishnu. So they're all, one sense, one, because avatar means simply Supreme Lord, and the Supreme Lord is only one. But he takes many forms according to his pastimes. So they are in a superior position and worthy of worship even by the Shaktivesh avatars. We see that as the case particularly of persons like the Kumaras. They are always respecting the Supreme Lord, for Narada Muni. He is a devotee of the Lord, but he's also Shaktivesh avatar. But he acts as a devotee of the Lord. So though they are empowered, they play a role of worshipping the Supreme Lord. They don't become proud of their position at all. So they are in a superior position to the regular jivas, but less than the Supreme Lord. And the whole of the purpose of the Bhagavatam is to show that even these avatars of the Lord are only aspects of Krishna. And Krishna is superior to all of the avatars. He is avatari. He is the Amsi. It is the supreme form of the Lord. Okay? So all the forms of Vishnu, all the other avatars are actually only aspects of Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. So he's in the supreme position. And so though the different avatars are discussed here in the 4th canto and 5th canto, 6th canto, 7th canto, 8th canto, 9th canto, you have all the different avatars from Swayambhuva Manvantara and Chakshusha Manvantara and Vaibhasvata Manvantara. They're all described in sequence. But then finally, in the 10th canto, we have Krishna. So he actually, that's the goal of the Bhagavatam, to discuss Krishna. So the whole of the 10th canto is concerned with Krishna, not just one chapter or whatever, but the all the chapters of the 10th canto are concerned with glorification of Krishna and his pastimes. So he's a very, very special position in relation to all the other forms of God, and of course in relation to Shaktivesh avatars and jivas and kings and vibhutis and devatas, etc. He's in the highest position of all. So although these cantos are only in relation to the 10th canto, they are actually subsidiary to glorification of Krishna.
All the incarnations of God, and they are controlled by Krishna.
Well, they are. All the incarnations are supreme. They're all God.
But you know, like Krishna told the chant of the Brahmanas, the 10th chant were born to a Brahmana. This time the son of God who died. So Vishnu told all the chants. But then the comment is that why Vishnu can't come down to see Krishna in Dwarka.
Yeah.
Why he has to steal the chant of the Brahmana.
Yeah.
So without Krishna's permission, Vishnu cannot come down to see Krishna. To steal their control for Krishna.
Well, yes, everyone also ultimately is in a lesser position. They have less powers. And even Balaram has less powers than Krishna. So Balaram is bewildered by the yoga maya of Krishna, and he doesn't understand that Krishna is all the calves and cowherd boys. He doesn't even understand that because of Krishna's superior powers. So what to speak of Vishnu forms and others? Oh, he is the same as Krishna.
So the name is the second Ishavatar. class of worship, worshipping Supinda, what are the other types of worship?
They are actually the Supreme Lord, so in one sense they don't have to, but we do see that, for instance, the Mahavishnu form worships Krishna. So even these forms engage in the worship of Krishna. That is very special. Devatas are also in a very special category because they've been appointed by the Lord to carry out activities. So they are also elevated devotees, and they also see the Lord. The Lord resides as he's born in, as Vamanadeva up there on the heavenly planets and whatever. So they also have perception of the Lord. So they're actually beyond sadhana in one sense, because only if you're in bhava you can see the Lord. So they are highly qualified. But even persons in bhava sometimes get affected, as we see in the case of even Bharat, and begin attracted to it here. They're also specially appointed by the Lord, so they're devotees, like the devatas, manus and devatas.
Sometimes
the demigods come to the material quality, isn't it? Well, yeah, they can get influence. They still have material bodies. And they're not on the highest level of prana. So therefore, they can get affected.
Interesting that I'm
not even
able to understand.
You definitely
understand that Krishna is
supreme or Kumara. Yeah, and generally we can say that it's actually also the influence of the yoga maya potency of Krishna for his pastimes that he particularly bewilders them in many cases. Well, just to show the relation of the expansions to the original in that sense. It's not mentioned in the scriptures. According to Rupa Goswami, the Chaktivachapakars are fixed, and we can't add people to them. So, those that are mentioned in the scripture are those, and that's it. Great devotee.
Thank you.